ILL AM 580 and 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3 Urbana.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Keeping the Faith. This is Don Nolan. I'm filling in for Steve this afternoon. And our guests this afternoon are Casey Umland, who is the almost brand new program director of the University YMCA. And along with her is Ann Resmus, who is the program coordinator. And we're going to be talking about the topic of current programs and new directions for the University YMCA. Thank you for being with us, Casey and Ann.
Sure, no problem. Thanks for having us.
Glad to be here.
Well, the University YMCA has been around for quite a long time and is a sponsor in many respects of this particular program. Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for this program, was the previous director for how many years? I can't remember.
I think it was eight.
8 years. And you came on board, Casey, at what time?
I came on, last summer, I guess 2007.
Yeah.
I'll have my two-year anniversary in about a month.
I was going to ask. You're almost a year old. And you've been involved in other ways for quite some time. Is that right?
Yeah, I've been involved with the Y since my freshman year of college when a friend asked me if I wanted to come to an Amnesty International meeting. And,
uh-huh.
and so from there, started attending some of the lectures and got involved in a planning committee for one of those lectures and just sort of became one of the students who hangs around the Y all the time.
Right. So you're kind of inside and out. You know the organization,
yeah.
Right? And Ann, how long have you been involved?
I've been at the Y since August. So I'm the newer one.
So you're new.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
And have you been involved in programs over the years, or is this...
not in a significant way. I've always been interested at the Y and attended a number of things, but uh-huh. not as sort of a long-term member. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to be talking about a number of the things that the Y is involved in. I hope we talk in broad terms, general terms, as well as particular terms, a little bit about what the mission is of the Y and why it exists in the community. Let's just be kind of crude to start off. How come you don't have a gym and a track and a swimming pool like the Ys I had when I grew up?
It's really interesting that you asked that because I always want to ask the other Ys how they ended up with gyms and tracks and swimming pools, because the YMCA movement really started at universities. As students were saying, there is no spiritual life center for us on our campuses, particularly secular campuses or state universities. And so they decided to form organizations in which to be able to explore those things and talk about different spiritual issues that they had. So YMCA has really came out of this sort of more collegiate community building movement. And then as they sort of split off into their own individual places, a lot of places sort of identified the needs of their community to focus on, and a lot of times those were things like fitness and health issues in a lot mm-hmm. of communities. So now a lot of YMCAs have pools and gyms, but our Y is one of the few Ys left that, having remained in a university community, began to expand more into sort of a broader range of interfaith mm-hmm. issues, and then sort of into things more sort of ethics related, and then into social justice.
Mm-hmm.
So we're pretty proud of our tradition at our Y and the things that we continue to do, as well as the overall YMCA movement.
I should let our listeners know, if you don't already know, this is a call-in show, and if you would like to call in and ask any questions about our topic, which is current programs and new directions for the University YMCA and our guest Casey Umland and Ann Resmus, you can call in at 333-9455, or if you'd like to call an 800 number, you can call 1-800-222-9455, and we'll take your comment or question. Tell us a little bit about the YMCA as an idea in this country. How did it get started? What's the history? It's over 100 years old, right?
And this Y, the YMCA movement, I'm actually, my guess is it's about 150 years old, and I, I don't know exactly. Our Y is 136 years old. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it was a group of students on campus who said we would like a spiritual life center. And there were churches and things like that, but they didn't feel like there was necessarily something that really appealed to youth. So, you know, the acronym YMCA is Young Men's Christian Association. And there was a Young Women's Christian Association that we were very closely tied to for a number of years, and now still actually is within our building, but is a separate organization. So students came together to discuss God, to worship, and eventually those discussions led to broader ethical issues around, I would say, around the time of the Civil Rights Movement. That was when the Y campus YMCAs were really active in the civil rights movement, and that was when the shift sort of began towards more of a social justice focus. Or
at university-wise, or in
at university YMCAs in particular, it was sort of actually a source of tension between, I think, campus YMCAs and the larger YMCA movement for a while, because here were all these young people who were sort of seemed so radical and were
back
trying
to
create change. Yeah. They shook things up a little bit, mm-hmm. but that's also sort of one of the prouder moments of the history of the YMCA that the overall Y now really recognizes. So around that time, students started saying being spiritual and being ethical is not just something where you're developing a personal ethic, but we need to go out and create social change. So for our Y in particular, around 1969, you start to see when Students for Environmental Concerns was started, you start to see programs that were really more issue-focused.
When was that?
1969. So they'll actually have their 40th.
That program has been around since
1969. Yeah, they'll have their 40th anniversary this fall. So,
is that one of your older ones?
I think it's the oldest of our student programs that still exists.
Huh.
The second oldest is Alternative Spring Break, and it's 20 years old this year.
Now, I happen to know, because I have a very close relative who is involved with the YWCA. Their mission is very specific, empowering mm-hmm. women and eliminating racism, as mm-hmm. I remember. Yours is a good deal more broad than that.
Mm-hmm.
Just happen to have it in front of me here, to challenge and nurture the mind and spirit of individuals and communities, to develop and practice ethical principles and responsible leadership for social justice and the integrity of our natural world. Do you feel like that very, very broad mission or mandate that you're getting closer to, or have you reevaluated how you're trying to meet that mission?
I think we're always reevaluating how we're going to try to meet that mission. Would you agree with that, Ed?
Yeah. I mean, as the newer person, I see us lifting it up often, and I'm kind of looking for those things that tie us to our mission, and as we're beginning to think about new programming, really actively thinking weekly mm-hmm. About what does that mean and how do different constituencies see what that mission is about and how do they connect into that. So, yeah, I think it's...
I don't see in this mission the word spiritual or religious or Christian.
You know, we sort of... I think that's always a part of what we're doing, but it's... We allow it to be a really individualized definition of those things. So, obviously, we want to honor our tradition, and a lot of people will say, oh, it's the YMCA, so it's Christian, right? Mm-hmm. And we strongly consider ourselves an interfaith institution that's fully open to people of all or no faith.
It's taken the leadership in a lot of interfaith initiatives
mm-hmm.
in the past.
Yeah, and especially, I mean, Steve, that was one of the things that Steve really was mm-hmm. a strong leader for us for during his time, and we try to continue that tradition through involvement in lots of various interfaith activities on campus. But I think when people ask us that, my answer at least, is usually that we sort of look at what the sort of ethical tradition of Christianity is, this idea of loving your neighbor and creating a world that is sustainable and trying our best to be conscious of the needs of the entire world community. And so we do that in a number of different ways that are sort of reflected broadly in our mission statement, and I think maybe more specifically in our programs. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that I love the most about the Y is that because we have this sort of cycling group of members that comes from our students, that we have been able to adapt and change over time to say, mm-hmm. what are the issues that fit within that broad mission statement right now that are the most relevant and salient with our communities locally and globally.
Mm-hmm. How did you get interested in this job?
It's sort of funny.
Somebody liked you for it.
Yeah. Well, As I mentioned, I was involved in Y programs as a student. So the Y was sort of that second home place for me. And it really was also like that second sort of university for me. I think I learned as much being involved in Y programs about the things that I'm passionate about now as I did in the classroom, and it gave me a place to take that classroom knowledge and apply it to a place where I felt like I could actually make an impact, because sometimes in the class you're like, why am I learning this?
What was your major, or what did you focus on in graduate school?
I studied political science and economics, and mm-hmm. I was particularly interested in sort of like development issues and
community. Economic
development. Mm-hmm. I was really interested in human rights and sort of global inequality as a student. I mean, I still am, but that was really my focus. And so being involved in things like Amnesty International gave me a place where I could explore those issues and learn more, and also think about how social movements affect change. That became mm-hmm. something that I became really interested in. In grad school, I had worked as an undergraduate at the Campus Leadership Center. And in grad school, they asked me to stay on and help run their campus version of the program Leadership, which is really focused on building leaders with integrity and vision statements. I did sort of, all the behind the scenes work with another staff person, but as a graduate student took a large part of that, and then discovered that I really liked working with other students on exploring mm-hmm. what their passions were and how they wanted to make a change. So I think that was really what led me from thinking, I'm going to be an activist when I grow up. Like, mm-hmm. I'm going to go out there and I think there's an article in which I am quoted as saying that I wanted to reform the World Bank and the IMF. and went from sort of, so how did I get on this path? Went from thinking
like
I'm going to be,
sooner rather than later.
I'm going to be the one who goes out there and do it, to, I think that my talents and personal strengths are in helping other people figure out what they're passionate about, and that I felt I could make a bigger impact by impacting a wide variety of people who then would want to go out and make change.
Now, did you work for Amnesty locally, nationally, internationally?
Locally, the campus uh-huh. group. So we did, conferences and education kind of stuff. And
right.
we wrote our letters and helped get people free.
And Anne, how did you come to this position? What's your background that makes you interested in this?
My background is varied, but I think pretty applicable. My undergraduate work was in sociology and comparative religions, the interfaith thing is very, very close for me. And then did graduate work in theology and art.
Where?
At the Lutheran School of Theology at Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
And then have recently finished a graduate program in art education here at the university.
Mm-hmm.
All of those pieces, I think, fit into different pieces of the Y. And as we're looking towards new programming, I hope that will be the case more and more. So
does that mean we're going to see an aesthetic theme?
I hope so. You know,
in your programming,
we have a list which is long and growing for a variety of new program ideas mm-hmm. that are generated by staff, but also coming to us from a variety of other sources. And one that we're excited about is the possibility of doing some arts programming and really doing some exploration with other community arts groups into how we might fit the mission of the Y for that.
Let's talk a little bit about how you come up with your programming just a minute. Let me just remind our listeners, this is Keeping the Faith, and our guests this afternoon are Casey Umland, the somewhat new, almost one-year-old program director of the University YMCA. And we also have with us Anne Rasmus, who is the program coordinator. And we're talking about current programs and new directions for the University YMCA. And if you'd like to call in and talk to either Casey or Anne about these programs and new initiatives at the University of YMCA, you can call in at 333-9455. You can also call an 800 number, 1-800-222-9455. Well, you have quite a large number of programs that have been going on over the years. There's Know Your University. I think a lot of people locally know about that. The Friday Forum, Dump and Run. You have scholarship and awards programming. Apparently, one of your programs has gone by the boards, and that is the Communiversity. How did that happen? It's been around for a while.
Communiversity, as many people in the community know, is a long-standing and much-loved program that many, many people have been involved with over the course of the years in both taking classes and teaching classes, really wonderful mutual learning program that has benefited many people in many ways. But it's something that has changed drastically over the years and in the last number of years has experienced some pretty significant decline in both enrollment and number of classes offered.
Focus,
yeah. Mm-hmm. At a Board of Governors retreat a year ago, concerns arose about how closely Communiversity might or might not be tied at this point to the mission of the Y, and how resources were or were not being well spent in that regard.
You do have staffing expenses, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And limited staffing. So, you know. Mm-hmm. A Communiversity Review Committee was pulled together of broad and strong folks, both in the community and the university, to really look closely at the program. And in the course of what I think was a very good, lengthy review process, the decision was finally recommended to the Board of Governors, and the Board of Governors voted in April to no longer offer Communiversity as a program beginning in the fall. Mm-hmm. So we are sort of uplifting the idea of Communiversity as a sort of an umbrella concept, seeing that the Y is often effectively a bridge between the university and the larger community. And we want to continue to serve that function, but hopefully mm-hmm. In other ways.
Mm-hmm. Are you thinking about programming that is more specifically focused on your mission that might be like the Communiversity? Or how is your programming coming along in that regard? What changes are we going to be seeing? Any? Are you still working on it?
I think we're exploring a lot of new programming options, and it's sort of – we consider that to be, I think – one of the best things about the Y is it's a participatory process. So there are so many ideas, and what we're learning as we're trying to go through this process of identifying what's next is that there are a lot of people who want to do great things in our community and have a lot of really great ideas. And we'd like to go full speed ahead with all of them, but we also recognize that we are limited in terms of staff and other resources. Mm-hmm. And so we're really going through sort of an exploratory process now of figuring out whether it is that, I don't know, some of the ideas, whether it is that we're going to do weatherization of low-income housing, which is actually something we are going to do, or one of our student groups is going to do, or whether we're going to create the Y as an art space. So we want to do a lot of these things, but we also want to recognize that we can only do so many, and how are we going to choose which ones are both the things that most meet the needs of our community and reflect what the Y's strengths are, mm-hmm. And also are things that there can be participatory and that people are going to be excited to join us in. So, I mean, we have a small staff, but we are a large community of members of the University mm-hmm. YMCA, whether it's students, community members, faculty, staff, who give their time and talents to us mm-hmm. To try to accomplish good things.
It occurs to me, Don, as we mention the loss of Communiversity as a program, we may be startling and upsetting some folks in the community that are very interested in our ballroom dance classes, which are successful and will be ongoing. It's important to mention that.
Don't tell my wife I'm thinking about sneaking over and taking it, but yeah. Maybe now.
Well, no. Yeah, well, please do. Miss V, as she's affectionately known, Aurora Villacorta, wonderful long-term dance instructor who was formerly of dance faculty here at the university, kinesiology faculty, will continue to offer her classes at the Y, and we're happy to continue to host those classes.
Mm-hmm. You're going to continue, I assume, with Know Your University and the Friday Forums?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're very pleased with those programs.
When do you settle on who's doing it next year? Have you got that far in planning?
I would say we're about 75% to 95% done with the planning for those programs. So we do know that our fall series for Friday Forum will be, it's called Beyond 100 Days, Is This the Change We Need? And so it's sort of a check-in.
You're about 200 days by then, right?
Yeah. So we know it's more than 100 days. We've done the math. But it's really, it's broad. It's not even just necessarily looking at only what the Obama administration has accomplished in its first few days, but really as a reflection of the fact that we saw Americans on both sides of the aisle say, we need something different when they went to the voting booth. And a lot of people have a lot of ideas about what that means. And so looking at, here are all these important issues that we as a nation need to face, whether it's healthcare or the economy, issues with our criminal justice system. And are we moving in the right direction, and are we moving at all? Or are we continue to have the same sort of policies that aren't necessarily creating any sort of positive change? And so that'll be a pretty broad series. We're very excited about the lineup that we have for the fall.
Beyond 100 days? Is that
Beyond 100 days.
Is that the theme?
Yes.
You settled on it?
Yeah. Is this the change we need?
Right.
Colon.
Is it going to be mostly local folks, or you have a star coming in from outside yet? Or
We actually have quite a few people coming in from out of town. There's sort of a broad range. We have, and names will escape me, and I hope these people will forgive me. We have a woman coming in from, who's the director of the Illinois State ACLU, who's going to talk about sort of rights issues in general, but the criminal justice system. We have Dave Stovall, who's up at UIC and also is with the Social Justice High School in Chicago, and he's going to be talking about education policy. There are quite a few Chicago names who will, of course, escape me now just because we're on the radio.
For our listeners' sake, Friday Forum is open to all, and describe how it's set up.
So every Friday at noon, we have a different lecture. They're always in some way related to a broad theme, like I just mentioned, but they generally cover a sort of a broad range of topics within that theme. Anybody can come there at Latzer Hall, but then we have lunch that's available from the Wai Tai Eatery, which is delicious but optional. And so people can come in, and if they need to leave early, they can, but we do about a 40-minute talk followed by question and answer.
And Know Your University is still running, right? And Dump and Run, that's been a very successful program, hasn't it, in the past?
Yes.
I assume you're going to be continuing with that?
Yes, we actually just finished collections and sorting everything and clearing out our main hall full of all of the donations we received this fall. And we'll start collections again, I think it's the week of August 12th, but over at the Stock Pavilion. And one of the things that we have found works really well for us and also for the community is doing a week of collections over at the Stock Pavilion. So we can just have people drop it off and immediately set it up.
Well, let's come back to programming in a minute. How do you have a sense of history about the broad aims of the local university? Why? I mean, how has it changed over the years, and how would you like to see it change in terms of meeting its mission? Social justice issues aren't as hot as they used to be back in the 60s, 70s, and even early 80s. And we do have a new president. Do you see this becoming more attractive, involving more students to come to the Y to deal with these issues? Or how do you feel a need to wake people up? Where are you at in terms of getting your mission more relevant to our consumerist, materialistic. What is it? Over 50% come down from the university, or come down from Chicago, right? Isn't that most of the students at the university or Chicago?
It's a heavily Chicago-based campus. Right. I mean, it's sort of hard for me, I think, maybe given my age group, when we hear sort of this claim that, like, there's not as much student activism or as much student engagement as there was in the glory days of the 60s and 70s or 80s. If only because I'm like in the heart of it every day at the Y of student activism. And I think at least in the last 10 years, this is the highest levels of student activism that we've seen in at least the last 10 years.
In terms of intensity or the volume of quantity of students or what?
I would say intensity and sort of the things they're accomplishing. We actually just found out a few weeks ago that one of our student programs, our oldest program, Students for Environmental Concerns, they applied for two grants from the Clinton Global Initiative, Outstanding Commitment Award program, and they actually received awards for both of those programs. So one thing they're doing is they're doing composting locally in the community that will be used for a student-run farm to build awareness about sustainable agriculture. And then they're also applied for a program that will use revolving loan funds to weatherize low-income housing in this community. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of one of those things where this is what I love about working with students. They heard about the program approximately 2 days before the award applications were due. And the composting thing was something they had been working on, but the weatherization program was an idea in someone's head. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, let's just try it. Let's throw together. I mean, they worked really hard for two whole days on it, but they said, let's throw together a proposal and threw together something to get this award, which is actually, I mean, it's a pretty prestigious award to have received. And now they're going to be able to go out and do it. And that's what we see all the time from our students is they have these ideas and they see opportunity and they connect it. I do think that probably the biggest change that we've seen maybe since the 60s is most students come into the university with a strong service orientation already. Mm-hmm. So I think that students overall or young people overall sort of have a bigger sense of volunteerism than maybe they did 30 years ago. But the justice part of it, the sort of connecting service to the greater institutional problems that create the need for service or volunteering or philanthropy is maybe not as fully developed. There's not as much of a sense. Students seem nowadays less comfortable sort of like marching on the streets and advocating for change loudly. But they do it in other ways. You know, they like to do things that are hands-on. Mm-hmm. I mean, when it comes down to it, when they see injustice, you also see them take to the streets. So we had a number of students who were involved in our programs who were involved in the big rallies, the Prop 8 protests up in Chicago this summer. There have been a number of protests that students have been involved in from RY about the end of the wind turbine no longer being built on this campus. And I think that, at least from talking to them, they're sort of moving back in that direction. They're starting to see that while their actions are vitally important and volunteering and service and education are vitally important, that they're also charged with the need to speak up and organize for change. Mm-hmm. So we're really, I think that's one of the directions we're moving in as we see new program initiatives is how do we support them in that process of sort of understanding not only what they want to do and what they're passionate about, but how do they find the best ways to direct
so
their efforts?
Do both of you hold the view that, in general, students at the U of I campus and across the board today, that the stereotype of them being more consumers and materialists than in the past is a false stereotype?
I would say it's false, certainly, of the students that we see daily.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to say. I wasn't alive, so it's hard for me to know whether or not it's true. I think across the board, we as individuals are probably more consumeristic. And so is it that students coming into U of I are more consumeristic, or is it that, like, we all have become more consumeristic and there is a subsection of that population?
Well, when you look at the preferences for majors in graduate school, the decline in the humanities-related programs, the numbers seem to suggest that pursuing wealth and economic well-being has been on the increase. I'm not an expert on this. I'm just wondering if that's reflected in what you see.
You know, and I'm not sure. And this is sort of, you know, this is one example that may not account or excuse an entire population. But I think partially, I think that students are finding that they don't have to major in the humanities or study the humanities to also have an education that deals with issues facing the world. So, I mean, one of our programs is Engineers Without Borders. And these are engineers who are committing their lives to creating social change. I mean, they're one of the most active and giving groups of any of our groups. And so, and having interacted with that subsection of students, like these are engineers who aren't going into engineering because they want to make a lot of money, but
these
because they think
students?
Some of them are graduate students, some of them are undergraduates, but they went into engineering because they wanted to build wells in developing nations, not because they wanted to make a lot of money. I mean, we have students who are actually just got their graduate degrees who are spending, there's one who's spending his summer in Nigeria right now, helping them with a water project that they thought was for a community, when they first started, thought was for a community of 50 and is actually for 200.
Wow.
So this is the third time that they've gone over to Nigeria to continue to work on that project.
Do you think that the recent economic meltdown and the refocus on being more frugal and focusing on family and community perhaps is going to play a role in how you do your future programming or changing the values of students to any degree? Or are you going to focus on these kinds of concerns, or does that play a role at all in your thinking for programming?
I think it's something that they'll struggle with, and so we'll struggle with them through it. I think it creates for us opportunities to educate and advocate, and that's exciting. I mean, I think sort of the economic meltdown, if anything, one place I've noticed is it's created a lot more interest in the environmental movement and sustainability, and so we're seeing a lot of interest from students in doing programs related to sustainability and the environment, but also doing it in a way that doesn't exclude those more low-income individuals.
Well, one of the terms that is mentioned in your goals and objectives is economic justice issues. There's a lot of economic justice issues. A lot of people are angry about what they perceive to be greed and a lack of focus on patriotic or national concerns or interest, even violating fundamental values of Christian ethics. I'd be surprised if you don't see students coming up with new ideas to focus in those areas.
Yeah, and that's one of those programs. When I was a student, I felt like that, you know, the sort of World Bank, IMF, global labor was like one of those things that had a lot of salience on our campus.
Right.
In terms of the activist community, it maybe wasn't widespread over the whole campus, but there was a lot going on about sweatshops and about
I interviewed
migrant farm workers. And then I think there was sort of a couple years there where it went out of vogue. I mean, it wasn't that no one was doing anything, but it wasn't sort of like the hot top. The environment sort of, I think green became the new sort of sweatshop.
Green is the hot topic now, right?
Yeah, green became the new topic. And it's interesting for me in our context of how we work with students is I think what goes in and out is partially a reflection of what's going on in the world, but it's also a reflection of what students feel like they can make the most impact on. And I think that the green movement is hot not only because it's important and because there's a lot of information about it out in the news and otherwise, but also because students feel like there's a lot they can accomplish themselves. Whether I mean, they can do things from doing advocacy or you know, trying to advocate for a wind turbine on the university campus to creating recycling programs, and then from there they can develop that into whatever they want.
If you'd like to pass on a comment or a question to our guests, feel free to do so. We're talking about new directions for the University YMCA. You can call in at 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. So is the Students for Environmental Concerns your most active group at the current time?
It's our most active environmental group in terms of numbers. We have two other very large programs just in terms of numbers. Mm-hmm. Our vis-a-vis tutoring program continues to be one that there are a lot of students who are involved in that. Hundreds of students go out into our local schools and tutor through vis-a-vis. And our alternative spring break program, which sends service trips not during just the spring but every break, so right. summer, fall, winter, and spring, is at the largest it's ever been. So we sent more trips this year than we've ever sent, impacted more students.
What kind of numbers are we talking about?
We sent 32 trips this
wow.
This year, and on each of those trips there's 14 students. So mm-hmm, you mm-hmm. do the math. Right. There's a large number of students, and they're really working. We're very proud of that program because it isn't just about a week-long service trip. What a lot of people don't realize is that when students sign up or apply for a trip and choose to go on it, they commit themselves to like 8 weeks of programs mm-hmm. surrounding the issues that they're going to be tackling. So they're responsible for doing fundraisers for the organizations that they'll be visiting. They have to do some sort of pre-break service project. They do mm-hmm. coffee talks in which they get together with another group and talk about what issues are going to be addressed on both their trips. And then we really encourage a post-break service component for those things so that it's not just about students going on a trip and getting to volunteer for a week. Mm-hmm. It's also about them learning and gaining tools to be able to bring that back and continue to, mm-hmm. that process.
And the Students for Environmental Concerns, what are they up to?
They're such an exciting group right now. I don't have favorites, but they're one of the most exciting ones to talk about. So I mentioned they just got these two grants from the Clinton Global right. Initiative. And so they'll be working on developing those programs. They've been highly active in starting a composting site in this community that will mm-hmm. be used for a student-run farm. They're really advocating for the university to consider different types of clean energy technology fees. The students actually have, at the University of Illinois, have a self-tax on themselves, two self-taxes, which are used to support sustainable projects. One specifically is clean energy technology, and the other is more broadly student sustainability. And those were actually advocated for by Students for Environmental Concerns. They were really the impetus to get those.
I understand there was controversy recently about the wind turbine. What's the status of that?
As far as we know, it's on hold. Mm-hmm. The students are continuing to look into the program. There's some question as to whether or not it's cost-effective enough, whether it really saves enough energy. There's also this big wind turbine farm going up not far from here.
Mm-hmm.
So the students are, I think they were disappointed because it was something that they really worked hard for. I also think that they're, and it's something that I think they're going to continue to ask questions about because there needs to be some, I think, additional answers over why exactly we're not getting the wind turbine.
That's an interesting economic justice issue, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as I understand it, I'm certainly no expert, but I understand that in Germany in particular, there's a huge percentage already of energy is provided through wind and solar, and yet we're getting pushback right here in River City, so makes you ask who's doing the pushback.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't. Do they want to go there?
They may. I mean, we let them go where they want to go, and provide them
so
the support and guidance. Not really. It doesn't feel like it. We try to give them the tools to consider the issues carefully, and also when there's a clear need for someone to speak up or advocate mm-hmm. or act, give them the resources and the tools to be able to do that in the most effective way possible.
What is the Green Observer?
It's our environmental magazine.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually sort of grew larger. It was part of Students for Environmental Concerns. It started out as something called Environmental Resources. And they decided one day that they were going to change it from just a newsletter to a magazine, sort of a free magazine that would be given out sort of like the buzzes mm-hmm. on campus. And it's continues to be one of our great programs. They have just started an online version that they'll be updating, hopefully continuing to update throughout the summer.
Anybody can access?
Anybody can access.
Do you know the website?
I want to say it's greenobserver.blogspot.com, but it also might be gomag.blogspot.com.
You can also click it just by going to...
If you go to our website, there's a link on there. So.
Right. And what is Red Bison?
It's our prairie restoration group. So if you're driving down Neal Street out towards Savoy, I think it's Neal and Windsor, you'll see a plot of restored prairie that Red Bison is the steward of. They were able to buy that land years ago, and they continue to tackle the invasive species on that property and teach students about native prairie.
And you have a campus vegetarian society that I happen to know has been active for quite some time.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the groups that's probably at one of its high points in years.
Really?
I think there's a lot of interest in the vegetarian, vegan lifestyle right now. And it's sort of, it's pretty laid back, fun group. They have these weekly potlucks and everyone's invited.
Getting a lot of interest because of all the focus on industrialized food and agriculture and the effects that it's having on our health.
Yeah. And that's a group I really love because a lot of people think it's just like they have these weekly potlucks. So they have parties. Why are they a Y group? But I've seen when the Red Herring was in trouble, when it seemed like there was a possibility the Red Herring might close, that was a group of individuals who at their potlucks was sitting around talking about how important it was to support this restaurant and how can we get other people to go and how can we raise awareness. They actually, through Communiversity last fall, taught a vegetarian course in conjunction with the Red Herring and raised proceeds that went to help support the Red Herring along with Chad over there.
We'll talk about your human rights activities in a minute, but what are you going to do with art and theology at the University YMCA?
That's a good question. Several things, I hope.
What does art have to do with theology?
Oh, all kinds of things, Don. That could be a whole hour on its own. As Casey had mentioned, Steve Shoemaker obviously brought a long tradition of very acute interest in sort of how theology connects to social justice for the Y, and that's really central for me. So I am speaking with a variety of people and would certainly welcome any other any input that anyone might have into what that might. I'd like to think big but kind of start small, I think. Look at the possibility of bringing in a series of kind of splashy names of people who talk about these kinds of things in profound ways that might draw new audiences to the Y. Mm-hmm. And, you know, start with a series that looks something like a lecture series, but with some more legs to it. I hope get some community involvement going, maybe get the person on Keeping the Faith, do a variety of things, programming around some people who would be a draw and kind of go from there. The art piece is not disconnected but isn't necessarily connected to the theology thing for me at the Y. I think art is one way of communicating that can be terribly profound, and certainly many artists are working on social justice, environmental justice, economic justice issues and have a lot to say. And I think the Y can be a good venue for those kinds of conversations.
There used to be a work of art. I can't remember it very clearly. I'm sure you know what it is. It was the number of Iraqi deaths that were being added compared to those from the U.S. Is that still there? Is it moved on or what?
I believe it's moved on. I want to say that was up when... It was up before I became program director at the Y, so I want to say it was up in like 2006 or so. And it was, I believe, a Department of Communications professor who had been working on it and who brought it to the Y, and so we had it up.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, now I remember.
And I believe it's moved on, but that's sort of in line with what we think about when we think of art. We certainly think of art as another example of a way that you can impact your community.
I remember a very powerful art happening, I guess you'd call it, the military boots exhibit.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep.
Indicating all of those who had been locally involved. I had a student, one of whose names was associated with that. Clearly had a very, very emotional and powerful impact. Is that the sort of thing that you're thinking about moving toward? I mean, that's certainly an interface between art and justice issues, mm-hmm. an example of it.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a good example of the kind of thing we're looking for.
I used to be on the board of the Whirlwind Project. I don't know
yes.
if you've heard about that.
Yeah. Yep.
That is waning a little bit now, but their concern with art certainly was of great significance, art and music and other cultural areas as well. And we have had debates about whether art should be tied or in any way leashed to moral issues, the relationship between art and morality, not just theology.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, hope to see more of that kind of thing
yeah.
moving in your direction.
Thank you.
We're getting close to the last part of our program. You still have a chance to call in if anybody's interested in talking to our guests this afternoon. We're talking about new directions, current programs at the University YMCA, and our guests are Casey Umland, did I pronounce that right?
Sure.
Who is the program director almost a year now, and Ann Rasmus, also new, who is the program coordinator at the University YMCA. Are you looking for input for at this point in time? Where are you in the planning process?
We're still looking for input. We've got what I think is a really good list of ideas. We're always open to input, especially if there are people who would like to be involved in, you know, actually being a part of those programs. One thing we try to do is if people come to us and it's an idea that fits within our mission, we try to figure out ways that we can be as supportive as possible
mm-hmm.
And in helping create those things. But certainly we are a more effective organization if we understand what people are interested in and what they view as important. I feel confident saying that we have a strong staff who's highly committed to the mission, but we are a staff of 8 people.
I was going to ask, how large is the staff? Full-time? Those are mostly part-time or what?
It's 6 full-time staff, mm-hmm. Including our housing director and our building superintendent, and then we're lucky enough to have Anne, who's with us half-time. And in terms of programming, we're all involved in programming in some ways, but it's Anne and I who are leading that sort of mm-hmm. push. And so we need more people to be able to accomplish more, and mm-hmm. We hope to engage others.
Now, one of your central focuses under student organizations is human rights mm-hmm. Issues. What are you doing in that area?
I don't know how many people are how many we technically list under human rights, but we have a number of human rights organizations.
We have 3 here, Amnesty International,
Libertas, and Invisible Complex.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Libertas is focused primarily on raising awareness about human trafficking, so they do a lot of education campaigns devoted primarily to that issue. Amnesty International, as I'm sure you're aware, is an international level organization of which we are one program. So their campaigns focus and shift depending on the interests of the students, but also sort of what Amnesty is working on, since that's really mm-hmm. based in a grassroots, the more people working on something, the more likely we are to create change model. And then Invisible Conflicts is a group of ours that tries to raise awareness about conflicts that are not necessarily covered in Western media or any media. In particular, they've been really interested in sort of civil wars and its impact. They have a really interesting, in addition to doing those things which are sort of campus and internal education, they have an interesting partnership with a community in Pajule, Uganda, mm-hmm. where they are hoping to help make that community sustainable. Currently, they're helping fund the education, or they're actually funding the education of 12 orphans in that community. Mm. But they're also helping the community start a soccer team for students that would sort of look more like a traditional YMCA mm-hmm. model, sort of leadership training through sports
mm-hmm.
Sort of program, but then also build a piggery so that the community can be more sustainable. in terms of its local agriculture.
A piggery.
Okay. That apparently, I've been told that's not a word. I've also been told it is a word, depending on which of the students in that group you're talking to at any moment. So, but a pig farm, a small pig farm.
Right.
And it really amazes me. I mean, I think they raised over $10,000 this year to support this.
Is that a
this
local
community.
Group or a national?
Invisible Conflicts.
Uh-huh.
There's a sister organization in Loyola that one of the members, one of the founding members of our organization was, his brother was involved in Loyola and he brought it to our campus. And the Loyola organization has another community that they work directly with.
I see. That's a very interesting organization.
Yeah. They were sort of inspired by the movie Invisible Children.
And, oh, right.
Yeah.
That's where the title comes from.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you have dorm rooms on the third floor. Is that right?
Yeah. We have a third floor residence hall with, I think it's 12. 12 young men live up there.
Young men?
Okay. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's only men mm-hmm. at this stage in the game anyway, or it mm-hmm. has been. I mean, historically only men.
Mm-hmm. And you are also the place where various different cultural groups meet. I understand mm-hmm. there's a Philippine Student Association, Korean. Are there others?
Those are the two that are officially affiliated with us as student organizations. We also do an international student reception every year.
Mm-hmm.
So we are the place in August where students are officially welcomed.
Uh-huh.
And then an international dinner, which this year was, I feel confident saying, one of the most fun international dinners we've had in a long time.
We were able to get.
We just have really great performers. We had the local Congolese choir
mm-hmm.
Come and perform, and everyone was standing and dancing and clapping, and they were just really great performers. And we have, as always, a number of great cooks, and I think it's one of my favorite, most fun programs that we put on every mm-hmm. year.
So how do you get funded? How do six people make it?
Our funding sources are mixed. Some programs are specifically funded through co-sponsorships, like Friday Forum. A lot of that is done through co-sponsorships. But in terms of sort of staff and building costs, we do rent parts of the building.
Mm-hmm.
So that accounts for part of our income. We have an endowment, which was hit by the stock market. Just like everybody else's financial investments were, but we are fortunate enough to have an endowment that helps fund us. And then mostly individual donors. I mean, we do get some, we do, as I've mentioned, write grants and get grant support. But for the most part, we have really loyal friends who either are active in the community and like what we're doing, or were once involved in YMCA programs mm-hmm. and would like to see that work continue, and who credit at least some part of their success to their experience at the Y. So, I mean, we have sort of a diverse number of funding, but we're heavily reliant on the kindness of those who support our mission.
You have an auction, as I remember, an auction dinner.
Yes.
Is that still going on?
Yes, we do have an auction, and then I forgot special events. So we also have an auction dinner every year. This year was our most successful auction to date. And then, obviously, we have the ever so popular dump and run program, which also serves as a fundraiser as well as an environmental program.
Now, you have some physical upgrade needs, as I understand it, right?
Mm-hmm.
How old is the building itself?
The building was 1937.
First of all, where is it, for those who don't know?
It's 1001 Wright Street, which is on the corner of Wright and Chalmers, right in the heart of campus across from Lincoln Hall.
Mm-hmm. And how long has it been there?
1937.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a beautiful.
When's the last time it was remodeled?
1937.
it looks like a 1937 vintage building.
I'm sure that there are individual rooms that were remodeled. I know the K rooms came later. I believe they came in the 50s or 60s. That's our basement rooms, which maybe some of our older listeners may remember was a hot spot to hang out in years back. But most of the building.
I was there.
I'm happy to say we got Wi-Fi this year.
Yeah. And new carpet and lights and paint. We're sprucing up a little bit.
Yeah.
Yep.
What about those old windows? Are they?
I think the windows have been replaced before 1937. But I'm actually under the impression our windows are not, that they're pretty pretty good. Mm-hmm. I'm not all that involved in the Capitol.
The wall is so thick. I mean, so you should be pretty well insulated.
It's a fireproof, supposedly fireproof building. We are pretty well insulated. I mean, it's an old building, so we have one thermostat for the entire building. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're fortunate enough to have this beautiful old building that has good bones, and we've just got to spruce it up a little bit and make it more highly functional.
What do you need to do?
Our roof is falling off. It's made of slate, so that poses some issues. So we need to get that fixed. We recently replaced the boiler. We're looking to update sort of some of the things we need for programming, like our audio system in our main lecture hall, so that it's more user-friendly.
Mm-hmm. That's where the Friday Forum is, you mean?
Yeah.
Latzer Hall.
Mm-hmm. And we're... At this point, I think the things we're most excited about is we're really looking to put in an elevator. Mm-hmm. Our building is not accessible as it stands now. That poses a number of issues for programming.
If you're gonna get state money?
We're hoping.
Will that be a problem for state money if you're not
If we're not accessible? I mean, I think because our building is historic, we've sort of been given an out. As an organization and the type of organization the Y is, we really...
You're committed to it, right?
We're really committed to it. And it's something, I mean, it's a difficult... It's going to be very expensive and it's going to stretch our resources, but it's something that we think is important.
Mm-hmm.
There's been more than one occasion where we've set up to have a movie screening or something like that on the second floor and had to shift everyone in the building because otherwise there were individuals who wouldn't have been able to attend.
And you always have perennial parking issues, right?
Yeah, right. Like everybody else on campus. Right. But that's why we're getting a new bike rack.
Wonderful.
We are getting a new bike rack.
Easily accessible by bike.
Yes, and bus.
And in the evenings, we should mention, too, for evening programs, parking is not much of an issue on Wright Street.
Or in the summer.
Right.
Yeah, the summer. Right. Yeah.
Right.
Or in between semesters.
Yeah.
So we were going to focus on new directions. Let's talk a little bit about that. What will be different about the university, YMCA, 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now, as you would predict it?
I think that we're looking to be an even stronger voice in our community. We have a new executive director, Mike Doyle. He's provided, even in his short time, he just joined us this year in January, I believe. And he's been provided us with a lot of strong leadership and the conversations about what is needed and how we can reach out in a way that suits what we think that we're most ideally suited for, which is that we serve as this juxtaposition between our local community as well as the university community. Obviously, one of our strongest resources is our ability to engage committed, passionate students.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to focus on how to create those kinds of leaders and get them aware of what's going on here and be a continuing force of social change. Exactly what that's going to look like, I think there's some question as to, I think. But overall, I'd say we just want to broaden our impact and strengthen that impact so that we're reaching as many students as are interested in the issues we're dealing with, that we're reaching out to as many local community people as possible, that we're helping direct the resources that we have in the most efficient ways. You want to add to that?
Well, I would just add to that, you know, we sort of talk about ourselves as a community bridge. And one of the things just to maybe bring up is as people do hear about our programs, community people who are not necessarily associated with the university hear about our programs, we often get a lot of enthusiasm and people basically saying, I want to find a way to be a part of that. Yeah. And so I think partly as we're looking at new directions, we're also looking for more ways for community people to connect into the enthusiasm about what's going on at the Y.
Well, Casey and Ann, thank you so much for being with us. We've been talking with Casey Umlin, Program Director at the University YMCA, and Ann Rasmus, who is the Program Coordinator, about current programs and new directions. It's been an entertaining conversation. Thank you both for coming.
Thank you. Yep.
Good evening.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
On June 11th, we hope to encourage 250 listeners to invest in WILL.
Your dollars will help AM 580 build a better picture of what's going on in the world and how it will affect you.
Call with a pledge June 11th, our one-day Thursday fund drive.
Or give online now at willpledge.org.
By August 31st, 2010, our combat mission in Iraq will end. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time, under the best of our knowledge, we face a blunt question, and we're not alone. The phrase, "Did we win the war in Iraq?" has been searched over 7 million times on Google. So, was it worth it? Did we win? It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening at 7. WILL thanks Jack and Marjorie Richmond for their gift of the Richmond Journalism Teaching Studio, adjacent to Campbell Hall for Public Telecommunication.